they are totally lost. They feel so comfortable. I always say, when you think you are a best player, you need to be playing Champions League, my friend. Our mental strength of players is very weak, I can tell you now.
Big questions, even bigger guests. This is The Big Interview.
Good day and welcome to The Big Interview. On today's very special episode, we are delighted to have one of the country's greatest ever players. He has played for clubs all over Europe, starting back when he was 16 years old after heading to Germany to join Bayer Leverkusen's youth academy. From there, he made his way over to Ajax in Amsterdam, where he started playing for an injection club called Germinal Beerschot, and eventually he went on to be the club's captain. The chunk of his career was spent in England, where he represented clubs such as Blackburn Rovers and Portsmouth FC. He has scored goals that took his team to the FA Cup final, and he has scored a winning goal to beat Manchester City. He captained Bafana Bafana at the 2010 World Cup and has racked over 100 caps for his country. He became the youngest player to ever represent Bafana at the young age of 18 years old, and he still holds that record to this day. I am, of course, talking about no one else but Aaron Mbazo Mokoena. Aaron, thank you for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm very good, Aidan. Good talking to you as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to chat to us today. Let's get straight into the swing of things. You started your youth career right here in South Africa for Jomo Cosmos and then swiftly moved to Bayer Leverkusen in Germany. In terms of youth development, what were some of the biggest differences you noticed between the two clubs, even the two countries, so to say?
Yeah, Aidan, I mean, it's a big difference, really. Remember when I moved from Jomo Cosmos, I was 16 and a half, and it was absolutely a big ask for me, actually, to go to Europe at that age, which I mean, looking at what's happening now in this generation, it's very rare to see players going to such big leagues at that age. So I'm going to Bayer Leverkusen. I mean, remember then Bayer Leverkusen had the likes of Michael Ballack, had the likes of Zé Roberto. So, and they were playing at in Champions League that time. And they had also one of the experienced coach or manager, Christopher Daum. I mean, the difference really, it's that in Europe, clubs are so professional. You feel that you are a professional footballer, if you like, compared to back at home. I mean, right now, yes, things are a bit better, but again, it depends what club you're playing for. But the difference then, really, I mean, I think it's the fact that I felt that I could grow in Germany, and professionalism, it was spot on. So everything was just professional. So that's that really for me, actually, I would probably say it was a big difference.
So professionalism, do you think that difference is still there today?
Not absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you look at Bundesliga. As it is, I mean, how many players do they produce to other, other leagues like EPL, and the way it's been managed, I think once you can look at it from the league itself, then it's easy actually to actually look at the clubs as well. Right now, I can assure you, I mean, Bayer Leverkusen is still one of the top club in Europe.
Of course,
they play in Champions League. If they don't make it in Champions League, I mean, you would definitely they do. And make a point that at least the UEFA, they play in UEFA Cup. So yeah, definitely, professionalism is still there.
Well, fantastic. Let's move on a bit here, Aaron. From Germany, you made your way to Ajax in Amsterdam, where you were loaned out twice to Germinal Beerschot. You made 42 appearances and you scored twice there. Do you think that these loan moves bettered you as a player in terms of technical ability, skill level, and maturity?
No, absolutely. Absolutely, Aiden. For me, actually, moving from Bayer to Ajax, firstly, it was a dream come true. I mean, before I went to Bayer Leverkusen, I went to Ajax for tryout, and Ajax were, you know, were eager actually to sign me. But obviously, then I was still playing for Jomo Cosmos, and because of the negotiations, the deal couldn't go through. Bayer Leverkusen came knocking, and Jomo thought Bayer Leverkusen makes a big, a big business sense to him. When I was at Leverkusen, I mean, Ajax kept knocking. I mean, they called me every time, actually, to find out if I'm still keen to come to Ajax. And I eventually thought, you know what? I mean, Benny McCarthy was playing there, and he was doing well over there. And the youth set up over there, actually, it was absolutely, great. The difference between Leverkusen and Ajax for me was the fact that at Ajax, because as I said, I was 16 and a half, almost 17, I was still a baby, if you like. I had to live with the Foster family at Ajax. I had to learn the culture. I had to learn the language. And that actually, I felt that, signing for Ajax would be a great move. And of course, I mean, moving from Ajax, I've signed the 5 years, 5.5 years contract. And I played a few games, and Ajax bought this injection club in Belgium, which is Germinal Beerschot. And they asked if I would want actually to go and strengthen that club, and obviously to get a bit of game time, and as well, I mean, grow really. And I felt, you know what, I'm still contracted with Ajax. The fact that I was playing for the national for under 23, I would want to grow. And for me, actually, I felt that to grow, it's all about playing games. And the more you play games, especially in Europe, you get to have a self-belief. You get to gauge yourself, and that really, I think, it did help me a lot. And yes, I mean, it does help actually to get those loan spells.
You mentioned the word cultural there, and obviously that's becoming accustomed to different cultures. What would you say the biggest challenge of becoming accustomed to a different culture during your time in Europe was? What was the hardest thing to become?
Look, I think, language is universal in football, but once you step out of the club premises, you got to communicate with people. You go to shops, you go to restaurants, you meet people, you want to communicate with people. So I would probably say language is absolutely a dilemma, really. I mean, in back in my times, it was, and of course, I mean, even now, it's still a problem. If you don't get to a foreign land or a foreign country and start to learn the language, you will absolutely fall out. That's where now you find that you get homesick. And you start not performing in the field. So I would probably say really language is the most important thing when you get to a foreign country.
Aaron, in 2005, you made your debut in England playing for Blackburn Rovers, if I'm not mistaken. What was that occasion like for you, and how did the Blackburn fans welcome you?
Aiden, it was scary. I have to be frank to you. I mean, it was absolutely, nerve-wracking for me. I mean, yes, going to play in EPL for me, it's always been something that I wanted to have in my career or in my in my CV, if you like. It was that part of my goals, but I think to make my debut came really I would probably say it was so quick for me to make my debut. And again, it wasn't just a debut. I had to replace Ferguson, which was the captain for the club, the most respectable person or player for Blackburn Rovers, and the captain.
Big shoes to fill.
You know what I mean? So it was absolutely scary for me. But you know what? I had the brilliant manager, Mark Hughes. He said to me, you know what, get in there and enjoy yourself, but make a point that you don't concede. That's what actually you're good at. And you know, that that motivational talk with Mikey helped, with Spikey actually helped a lot. I mean, to be honest, it was absolutely stage fright was there for me.
You've just mentioned Mark Hughes, and ironically enough, that leads straight into my next question. What was your relationship with Mr. Hughes during your spell?
Oh man,
how was he?
Oh man, I think Spikey made things easier for me in to settle in England. He was a father figure to me. He wasn't just a coach or manager, if you like. I could knock in his office at any time when I have problems. I mean, he loved me to bits. He knew that I would put a shift in any time when he needs me. He actually knew that I was honest in this game, and there was no way, even though that at times he would put me on the bench, at times you're not in the team, but he knew very well in the morning when he shake my hand, I would have that beautiful smile. So my relationship with Spikey, it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. I mean, I always say he's one of the best managers that I had in my career, really. I mean, he made my life so easy. My relationship with him was just spot on.
You've previously described your move to England as a dream move. You made over a century of appearances for Blackburn. But from there, you travelled to Hampshire, where you signed for Portsmouth, and you made 77 appearances there. What brought this move on? Did you maybe think that you felt a move was necessary in order for you to progress in your career?
Yes, I think it was about time, Aiden. I mean, we had... after my Qs, we had a couple of coaches where I thought, you know what, for me, it's about time really to test the waters and to travel a bit in England. We had Paul Ince after my Qs. We had Sam Allardyce after Paul Ince, and I wasn't really getting much game time, to be fair. So I decided, I mean, Portsmouth, to be fair, they came knocking. Wolves as well, Wolverhampton, they came knocking. So I had to choose between Wolves and Portsmouth. And I decided to go to play for Portsmouth because for me, actually, I felt the history there was so massive. And, the likes of Nwankwo Kanu were still at Portsmouth. John Utaka was at Portsmouth, so I felt that when I go to Portsmouth, I would probably, you know, settle in quickly. And to be fair, Paul Hart, I mean, he was the manager. Actually, it's him who brought me to Portsmouth. I mean, immediately when I got there, he made me the captain of those big boys, you know, with big names who done well. I've just mentioned Nwankwo Kanu. Nwankwo Kanu played for Ajax, played for Inter Milan, played for Arsenal. To be the captain, I mean, of him, for me, actually, I felt, you know what, look, that is probably the club that I can go to. And at the same time, we have, with the James, David James on the goals. So we had big names that I had to captain, and I felt, you know what, this is the great challenge for me. Then that's why actually I chose to play. I mean, to sign with Portsmouth.
Where do you think your career would have went if you signed for Wolves instead?
To be honest with you, Aiden, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, back then, Wolves was not the Wolves that we see right now. We played so many times against Wolves when I was at Blackburn. I mean, firstly for me was, I'm going to Wolves. the city itself, it was just a dull city for me. Was I going to be it was going to be easy for me to settle in? It was going to be easy for me to be happy, because at the same time there's life of the field, you know. I felt for me that Wolves wasn't really the perfect choice or the good choice for me. I mean, to be fair, Mick McCarthy was the coach then, or was the manager then, and he called me almost every day to assure me that, look, you'll have a beautiful time here. But as much as I knew how Wolves City was, I decided, nah. I mean, Portsmouth for me was quite easier. I mean, from Portsmouth to, I'm talking about life of the field. From Portsmouth to London was just 2-3 hours. I used to live actually in Manchester, and every time I would take a flight to Portsmouth for training and back to Manchester, it would literally take me 45 minutes to get to Portsmouth for training. So that was really easy for me, because I felt that, you know, leaving Manchester to go and live in Portsmouth, I wasn't ready for that. I mean, I had a beautiful house in Manchester, and my life was just, you know, beautiful in Manchester. So so it was an easy decision for me not to go to Wolves, but to sign for Portsmouth.
Aaron, something I must ask you is, what was it like scoring your first goal in England? What was the occasion like? What did it mean to you? Where were you as well?
Wow. I don't know which one you're talking about, Aidan. Are you talking about the one that took us to the FA Cup semi-finals? Are you talking about the one that I scored against Manchester City?
I'll tell you what, describe both.
I think it's better. Yeah, I mean, you know, I always say, yes, people would look at, you know, my career and say, but he was a defender. What type of a defender he was, because he wasn't scoring goals. But my counter answer to them, it's always been, I always scored important goals, you know, especially in a top league like EPL. I mean, I scored a goal against Ipswich that took Portsmouth to the semi-finals of FA Cup final. Listen, we're talking about FA Cup final here.
The oldest trophy in football history.
The big trophy in the world, I would say. The trophy that everyone who's associated with football in the world would want to watch that cup. So yeah, so that goal took us to the semi-final, and the semi-final, then we had to play semi-final in Wembley. You know, when you are a footballer and you have played in Wembley, you know what I mean. I mean, it's a different ball game altogether. So that goal, actually, it was a beautiful goal with a header. A goal that set us to the, you know, to the next level, and the level that every footballer would want to play at. That was the big level, really, FA Cup semi-final, and we progressed to the FA Cup finals, really, from semi-finals to the finals. And the goal against Manchester City, that was, I think that in my career, that was the best goal ever. I mean, I think I was about, you know, 25 yards. I think I had a shot. I had a touch in it, and then here we go. I mean, I released the shot, and it was absolutely a smash for me. And that goal in Blackburn Rovers, it became the best goal of the season. And the other goal was again at Portsmouth with a header. So 3 goals in EPL, not too bad for a defender, to be fair.
I don't think many people can say that they've done that. And I want to stick with a bit of Europe, but also include some local questions here. Why do you think, I don't know, let's call it over the last 10 years or so, local representation, South Africans in Europe, it's been declining? Why do you think that is, and what should or can be done to get more South Africans representing South Africa in Europe?
Aiden, that's a beautiful question. You know, that's a beautiful question, and it's exactly where I am at the moment. That I decided to, you know, to get back to development. Development is so important, and I think we overlook that. We need to invest a lot of money, I would say, a lot of money in development and getting right structure, right coaches or qualified coaches in development, people who understand what is development. That's where we actually have to start before we even think of going to Europe, because to be honest, I'm going to be honest to you. I'm looking at the crop of the players that we have at this point in time. It would be very difficult actually to have these players to be signed by the clubs like Ajax Amsterdam, the teams that are played for, the teams like Blackburn Rovers. Even though Blackburn Rovers is playing in second division, we need to focus. We need to spend energy and money and time really in development and develop a different breed, you know, different breed of players. Back then, I think my generation was just after the Lucas, the McFish generation, the late Phil Masinga's generation. May his soul rest in peace. Their generation was tougher mentally than us. I mean, let alone skill. South Africans always have skillful players, but mentally, are we strong enough? Which is the question. And when I say development, the problem is that we find coaches who don't understand what is development. I always say, look, when you talk about development, you're not talking about winning games, Aiden. People have to understand that. Yes, I know that once you win games, you as a coach and players, you feel that you're happy, and it lifts your mood and confident. But once we talk of development, we have to tick boxes. It's technique in there, it's physique in there, it's mental strength in there, it's nutrition in there,
what you do off the field maybe as well.
Yeah, it's financial plan in there. That's development for me. I mean, I can really, the list is so long. So for me, I think before we even think to send players abroad, that's where we need to start. I mean, we have a totally different generation right now. Some of them, they are totally lost. They feel so comfortable. I always say, when you think you are a best player, you need to be playing Champions League, my friend. If you still play in South Africa in DSTV league, yes, it's in Africa, it's one of the best league, but best players are playing Champions League. Best players are playing in Europe, and they're rubbing shoulders with big names. Those are best players. When you're still playing at home, yeah, you still have a long way to go. So to answer your question, I think we need to really relook in development and a different breed. Our mental strength of players is very weak, I can tell you now. Money actually drives our players. There are players with hunger, but then there are players who feel that money is more important. Listen, I'm not saying anything wrong about Sundowns, but me personally, I would want to go to a club where I would have game time than earning bucks and sitting, not even making the team.
No, of course, because playing time will increase your confidence, will get you that big move, will better you as a player on and off the field overall.
And it's exactly what I've done at Ajax, Aiden. I've said it to you. I've signed five and a half years contract with Ajax. Ajax, one of the biggest team in Europe, playing in Champions League. But I've decided to go to Belgium. And here I am today, I'm Aaron Mokoena Mbazo, that I can take a call and call somebody and the person wouldn't ask me, who are you? You know what I mean? So I can, that's all it is. You want to be remembered. You want to write your own story. You want, how do you write your own story while you don't make, you don't even make a team? Yes, financially, maybe you can be sorted. But then, what did you do when you play football?
Yeah, no, of course.
Because I always say there's life after football, and we're so fortunate that we have a chance to make the second life from the first life. You make it well, you do it well while you're playing football. People, phones will be ringing when you finish playing football, asking for your savings.
Absolutely, absolutely. Those are very, very wise words, Aaron. So I want to move on to a more personal side. You were the youngest player to represent Bafana, and if I'm not mistaken, you still hold that record. What was it like for you? What did it mean to you when you got the call up to the national team?
Oh man, I was I didn't believe it. I remember I was at training, and Jomo came to me. If you remember well, Jomo was the caretaker coach at Bafana with Trot Moloto. Trot Moloto actually came first, and they worked together then. So Jomo said to me, "Hey, are you ready?" I'm like, "What you mean, Prajay?" It's like, I think they might call you for the national team. I didn't take him serious. I always, he knew, I mean, at training, in the games, I always made sure that I train as I play. I play as I train. So there was never a difference. So but I just took what he said and I moved on. Then I got a phone call from the office, from Jomo Cosmos office, that hey, you've been selected for Bafana Bafana. I'm like, wow, I just didn't believe it. And again, the thing is, I wasn't, yes, I was a regular at the Cosmos, but I wasn't stable enough. I thought that I wasn't ready enough to play for the national team at that particular point. So I just didn't believe it. But I tell you what, the best news of my life at that time, I think for me, that call up actually made a difference and made me actually not to look back.
And Aaron, you took the armband over from Lucas Radebe. What was it like having that responsibility given to you?
Yeah, no, it was a heavy one. It was a heavy one, but I think I was ready for that. I was absolutely ready for that. I remember once I said it to Lucas, if you still remember, I said to him, look, this is what happened. We go to the hotel. We're playing somewhere in Africa. We go to the hotel. And no one actually, most players, they respected Lucas so much that they were scared to share a room with him. And I stood there analyzing the situation, and I said, I rose my hand up and I said, can I share a room with Lucas? And he saw me walking in his room. I'm like, look, I'm here, can I share a room with you? And he said, with pleasure. Got in the room and listen, he was playing the worst music of my life. You know, jazz. This deep jazz, Aiden. I was so bored, but listen, I wanted to make sure at that camp, I made a point that when I leave this camp, there must be one or two great advices that I got from him. And I kept asking the question, I mean, how do you do it? You know? How is it playing in England for Leeds? How is it to captain Leeds? How is it actually to captain the country? And those words that he said to me, it's words that actually made me to think, you know what, it is possible. And again, I mean, then I was playing in Belgium. I was the captain at Germinal Beerschot. And the time actually the armband was handed over to me, I was absolutely ready. I was even excited that I'm taking the armband from now on, especially at that young age.
Aaron, I want to take things back to 2010, more specifically that opening match of the World Cup at Soccer City. You captained the team there, of course, in the 1-1 draw with that amazing goal by Tshabalala. What was that occasion like for you? Can you please talk us through that day?
I think I'm going to rewind it a little bit, Aiden, if I may.
From
the hotel, actually we had a situation at the hotel where we had thousands of South Africans actually outside our hotel in Sandton, wanted to sign autographs, wanted to have pictures with us. But we had this manager, Professor Carlos Pereira, who thought, you know what, I mean, it's exactly, actually I had so many one-on-ones with him because I was the captain. He said to me, Aaron, look, Safa, they want us actually to go out and greet the fans, but I'm not comfortable with it. And his reasonings was, you're going to get distracted immediately do that. I mean, he was all aware about our mental capacity when it comes to stuff like that, where we are celebrated, you know. He knew that mentally we will get distracted. I mean, we're talking World Cup and we are the host, so he absolutely didn't want us to get out and greet the fans. Eventually, I had a chat with him to say, look, even if we don't take all the players to go and greet the fans, let's just take few players just to appreciate, you know, just to acknowledge their presence and the support, you know. And he slept on it, came back and he's like, okay, I think you are right. Let's get out there, but I can only take 10 players. Because Safa actually wanted us to jump in a open tour bus to greet the fans and we did that. That's where it starts. We went out, we made a tour in Sandton, and listen, for me, because we're in camp, we're in closed doors, we're indoors, we didn't see what's happening out there till we jumped in a open bus, and then we felt amazed. We now actually understood that we're the host of the World Cup. How many people, like, it was absolutely the first time in my life seeing all the races that we have in South Africa united behind Bafana Bafana. It was just amazing. And the coach as well. Because as I'm saying, we're in camp, we're indoors, we didn't really see what's happening out there. Immediately when we jumped in the coach, he even said that this is unbelievable. I haven't seen something like this in my entire life. I mean, he played so many World Cups, Carlos Pereira, with Brazil. But this is what he said. It's the first time I see what's happening here. And I think it was a great thing that a great decision that we went out to acknowledge the fans. Yes, I mean, and then come the match day, we all relaxed, jump in the coach, we sing as usual, we now approaching the Calabash, FNB Stadium. We see actually how packed it is. We get in the dressing room, still singing. We're just eager. We were just anxious, Aiden, to get out and see actually how many people are there. Listen, we're talking first World Cup in the continent, first World Cup in South Africa, to be specific. We just wanted to see. For us, actually, it wasn't about that first touch, first tackle, first goal. It wasn't that moment when we go to the dressing room. It was never about that. I mean, we had TVs in the with screens in the dressing rooms, but we just wanted to, you know, with the naked eye, just to see what's happening out there.
Step on the pitch.
Exactly. As usual, we went out to check on the pitch. Listen, Till today, Aiden, I cannot, I still get those goosebumps. I cannot explain what I felt at that particular moment. I felt, wow, this is game time. Game on, you know. It was absolutely packed, you know, it was full house. I actually went back to the dressing room. I was the first one going back to the dressing room, while the players were still in the pitch. I had to talk to myself. I had to actually to bring myself back to start now thinking about the 2002 World Cup in Japan and Korea. I had to bring those memories back. FA Cup final. I had to bring those memories back so I can be ready for this game to understand how important this game was, especially against Mexico. Look, now comes the time, you know, we had to walk in that tunnel to line up for national anthem. We are still singing, relaxed. But I'm telling you, because now I understood how important this game was. Yes, fortunate enough, playing in 2002, experience played a big part in my, you know, in my game. Playing FA Cup, especially just weeks before the World Cup, it was a dressing rehearsal for me. Played a massive experience in my game as well and my confidence. Getting to the tunnel, I looked at the boys. The boys looked so relaxed as usual, singing. Now we had to line up for national anthem. Aiden, I was emotional, if you know what I mean. I was emotional. Sure. In my head now, I'm thinking, this, the first World Cup in the continent, in South Africa to be specific, probably the last one. Make the best out of it. That's when I was now having that executive board meeting by myself in that, in the lineup for a national anthem. Immediately when the national anthem went, during the national anthem, I was so emotional. I was so anxious now to have that first tackle in the pitch. I mean, we finished with the national anthem. Now, hear the whistle go now. Then I felt, yes, that moment we've been waiting for, it's now, has arrived. Here comes the goal.
Sure. What a moment.
Interception, Aiden. I intercepted the ball. The first pass was passed forward to Garcho Dikhasho. Dikhasho had a touch, gave it to Stuart Chabalala. Chabalala had a touch. Listen, it was in the back of the net. I just didn't believe it. I couldn't even run to celebrate with the boys. Rather, if you see that clip, what I did, I went back to Kune to celebrate with them. In my head, I'm thinking, we're playing against one of the biggest team in this World Cup, one of the experienced team in this World Cup with a massive history, with players that are earning dollars, euros in big clubs out there. Anything can happen. I don't want to waste my energy. Yes, it's good it's good to, you know, to celebrate such a goal, but I just want to focus. I went back to Kukune, told him, hey, let's focus, let's command, let's talk. The boys came back, but that goal, we felt that, you know what, there's something in this World Cup for us. It was absolutely unbelievable. I mean, FNB, it was on standstill. We couldn't even hear each other talking as the boys. The only thing that we need to do is just the eye contact to see what's happening. We just couldn't hear each other. That's how buzzing, FNB was. But that goal, absolutely, it took South Africa. Actually, it made people to see the talent we have in South Africa, and people to understand that we're not just walkovers, or we're not just adding numbers in the World Cup.
I think we can all remember where we were during that moment, during the start of the match, the anthem, the goal. I think that occasion was one of the most momentous in Bafana Bafana's history. Just given the occasion and the context behind everything, I think it was a very, very special time. Aaron, moving back to you, when you walked onto the pitch for your 100th cap for the country, what was going through your mind?
Wow. I always say, I have been the first for so many times, Aiden, and now being the first player to earn 100 cap, it was just an amazing feeling for me. Mm-hmm. But not that I was surprised, and I always said if I have played all the games that I got the call-ups for at Bafana Bafana, it could have been more than 107 caps that I played for my country for. I mean, there were, you know, games like your Botswana's in due respect, your Angola, like SADC games where I said, you don't have to call me for these games. I mean, try other players. If I had played those games, that 100 cap actually could have been quicker. Happened, but that moment I felt, listen, I wrote my own story. Mm. I wrote my own history. I actually, you know, traveled my journey. I stayed on my lane. I deserve this 100 caps. So it was an amazing moment for me, Aiden.
And what would you say has been the toughest part of your journey in becoming a professional athlete, from your debut to when you retired?
I think that the toughest moment was when I had to leave the country to go and play in Germany for Bayer Leverkusen. That was the toughest. It was exciting when I had the news, but when I got to Germany, it was so tough because I had to stay. I had to live by myself in a studio apartment, and at that age, I just felt, you know what, this is what I wasn't expecting. Mm-hmm. You know, I even had to call Jomo Sono to say to him, "Brother Jay, I don't think I'll make it here. I want to come back home and continue with my studies." That's exactly what I said to him, and he said, "Look, it's tough for now, but it will get better." I really wanted to come back home, Aiden. I mean, that for me, yes, it was the toughest moment of my career. Maybe there's a second toughest times as well when I couldn't play football for 6 months because obviously Ajax and the Bayer Leverkusen, they're in dispute in terms of having me. Mm. And the case or the matter had to be resolved by FIFA, and it took almost 6 months and I wasn't allowed to play football. I could only train. That as well, it was the toughest moment. I mean, imagine at that age, 17 years in a foreign land, you can't play the games, you only train. It was absolutely frustrating. So yeah, I think that era or that time for me, was it 1998? Yeah, 99. That year for me, it was, yeah, it was the toughest moment because I was young and moving to Europe and coming across those situations, I would say, living by myself in Germany and having not to play football for 6 months. Yeah, I think that was tough.
Sure, no, I can only imagine that. Being a veteran of Bafana Bafana, what do you make of Bafana's AFCON qualifiers group and their chances of qualifying for the AFCON 2023?
We absolutely have great chance. The only probably tough game that we might have is against Morocco. But otherwise, I think we have a big chance actually to get through. I'm not, to be honest, even against Morocco, I'm not really, really scared against Morocco. I mean, Morocco never made it difficult. If you can go back to history books, Morocco never made it difficult for Bafana Bafana. More especially the Morocco that they have right now, I think we can make it difficult for them. Maybe the difficult game would be the game against them away. It's always hostile. But otherwise, when they come here, I'm sure that we can get something out of that game. But otherwise, our chances are very, very, very big.
And what do you make of Hugo Bruce? If he is given enough time, where do you see Bafana Bafana going? Could we see the return of the glory days?
Look, I think it's just a matter of time, Aiden. I mean, look at the games that we had previously. Let's put aside a game against France. But the games that we had, the qualifying games that we had previously, the boys actually clicked. And we're talking about, you know, I don't like to say young boys, but the boys that can play together for the next 10 years, you know, if you like. I mean, that's where actually Hugo Bros is looking at these players that he wants. Yes, I mean, there's few, maybe not even more than five. There's few players that are over 30, but most of the players, they you know, below 30. That's exactly, for me, I think that's the right way. You know, it's we just need to give you know, to give the man the chance.
Of course.
I mean, for me, I see this qualifying games that we approaching now for Cup of Nations. I see those games changing. You know, we might be turning that corner with these games. I see us qualifying for 2023 Cup of Nations, and hopefully people will stop now criticizing a little bit and supporting now. But for me, I think what he really wants is to have, even if he moves on or he's no more Bafana Bafana, you know, coach anymore, he wants to have players that would still play for Bafana Bafana for a couple of years still. That's exactly what he's looking at. I mean, I know that right now people are panicking, people are, you know, pointing guns, but I really, really want to see what's going to happen once we qualify for 2023, because I'm convinced that the players that we have are good enough to qualify for next season. We just need to give these players support. I mean, stop talking about who's supposed to be there, who's not there. Who's not there, it's the coach's decision. Who's there, it's important.
Exactly.
Let's give who's there that support. I mean, as long as who's there is doing the business for the country. So for me, I think really, I mean, we stand a big, big chance, and we have an experienced manager. We have an experienced coach that has been out there. I mean, he made it out there, so why can't he make it here? So with the support, he can be able to feel that there is a support, and he needs to deliver as well. But I really like his philosophy of giving young lads, if you like, a chance for the future.
Absolutely. And Aaron, lastly here, what piece of advice do you have to give to any youngster out there who wants to become the next Aaron Mokoena?
I always say to footballers, especially young footballers that are playing this game currently, I always say to them, Aiden, don't cut corners. Don't cut corners. Respect this game. This game can change your life if you respect it. I'm talking from experience, you know.
Of course.
If you want to make it in this game, you don't have to cut corners. You don't have to cheat this game. Give it all at the particular moment that you get in this game. And it will take you far. So for me, I think it's just three things. I mean, discipline for me, sacrificing for me, and don't cut corners, you know. Then listen, if you are talented in this game, you find skillful players and you find hardworking players. So both players can get far as long as they apply these three things that I've just mentioned.
Spoken like a true champion. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us today on this exclusive interview on the SL podcast. From everyone involved, we hope you have a wonderful day further. Thank you for the time.
Thank you for having me, Aiden. A good one as well.
Big questions, even bigger guests. This is the Big Interview.